The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
Welcome to the One Fall Podcast. I'm Joel Johnson, and there's no Josh, but we've got Mo, so that's a nice little addition to the group. It's been a while, Mo.
Has it been that long? I'm not even sure how long it's been, but I think it's better. You told me that you got this news. I sent this news off to kind of a group chat we had, and then apparently you had gotten this news from Josh a whole bunch, and yet he's not here to talk about it. Clearly he cares. Clearly, if he's messaging you a whole bunch, this is something that actually matters to him. He just doesn't want to admit it.
No.
And what is it that actually matters? We haven't even told people yet. I'm guessing if they're listening to a show like this, they would know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the big thing with something like this is the big breaking news this morning. If you've been living under a rock or went off for a hike for 5 hours and then came back and was trying to make heads or tails of it, you
like
find
some
out
foolish people.
Yeah, nature. Yeah. It's wonderful. The story is that WWE has inserted executive directors. For Monday Night Raw, it is Paul Heyman, and for SmackDown, it is Eric Bischoff. So now we sit here and go, the first question I had was, is this kayfabe? Like, is this just a storyline and eventually they're going to be the on-air authority figures and that's all this is going to be and Vince is going to run the ship still? Obviously, Vince is still going to run the ship still. But from my very limited understanding, and a lot of people are still trying to make heads or tails of this, it seems like this is a real thing. What do you think, Mo?
Well, number one, good luck to making heads or tails of this. Good luck. We got to get some actual word, and who knows how long it'll take for real information to come out about this. When even your biggest names and the reporters in the industry are kind of guessing and speculating and trying to figure it out. And it's the type of thing that you won't know until you see it in practice, until you see how it all breaks down, and even the way it's supposed to break down, even however the rules are supposed to actually be, we don't know that they'll actually be that. What I'm saying is, when we say that Bischoff has control of SmackDown, does that mean that Bischoff will really have control of SmackDown? And we won't know until we see it, because at the end of the day, here's the thing: I wish I could be optimistic about this. I'm not at all, for many reasons. But the biggest one for me is, at the end of the day, who makes the final decision? It was the same guy who did a month ago, who did 2 weeks ago, who has for the last several years, and who's at the kind of the core of all their problems.
Yeah, yeah. Vince isn't going – like, I'd like to be a little bit more positive. I'm more of a – it's kind of a positive but wait-and-see mentality of when this finally kicks in, how is this going to impact the shows? I think the big thing for all this is all well and good, but like you said, Vince is still in charge, Kevin Dunn's still around, so two key problems for the current product are still very much involved in the day-to-day operations. So it becomes where if Heyman comes up with this brilliant idea to do with Seth and Mojo Riley, just say for the sake of saying names, and Vince is like, I don't like it. We're not doing it. That's how it's going to be. So, well, this could be a positive change in some ways. This could also just be putting a turd in a nice shiny new box and being like, see, it's new. We're changed. It's all good.
Well, there's so much. Yeah, I mean, there is so much to break down about this. But the thing is, Heyman... I know Heyman is looped into the product, into the modern day product very well. That's the word out there, that he's up to date on the guys and, you know, kind of the trends of the industry. And I know that he is. It's not fair to really blame him for ECW not being good when he was in charge. except for the only thing is ECW wasn't as good when he was in charge when it was brought back under that under the WWE banner before. And the dynamics of what kept it from being good is still there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? That's absolutely a great example.
And so and the other thing is there's two other things about him. I mean, it's still he's still a guy in his mid 50s who's being brought in, and you know, somebody whose peak was really 20 years ago. And he's the best of the two, you know? Like and I'm not saying that he couldn't at you know, still do something, but he's never had to run a 3-hour live show ever. Every week. Including pay-per-views, that also has to work in conjunction because they're sharing talent with another live show going on Friday nights. He's never had to do this. I don't know how well he can do this. I really don't. But especially with all the other dynamics of all the other people who are still in power there and the final person making the you know, decisions. So, like, I wish I could say, everybody's like, oh, well, you know, Raw will improve. I'm like, will it? Because we don't know, for instance, okay, Heyman's there. So are we still going to have 40 writers? We don't know. If they still have 40 writers, I don't give a damn if it's Heyman. It's still going to suck.
Yeah.
Because you got 40 writers. Like, that was the thing. The thing that nobody brought this up, but really, we talked about this very much, but the thing when I listened to that Moxley interview from a while back, you know, when he talked about the day of hell he had, where he had to film all those different segments, the thing that got me was he showed up and said, a writer handed me something. And then he got up and he was like, a different writer handed me the next segment. Like, how can you have any continuity in your storylines, nevertheless, characterization, any of it, if multiple people have to write different segments that all work together, but they're not all together? One person isn't creating even that one character's storyline and you know, dialogue. And so if Vince won't let him get rid of 40 writers and those 40 writers are working both shows still, and who knows how this works, or even if they drop it down to 20, it's still not going to improve. It's still I'm very skeptical that they can do what they, you know, and that Heyman will be able to do what he wants to do. Do I think he would have a shot? Likely, but I don't know, man. I'm not feeling good. I'm not feeling it.
No, and that's one of the things where the history has given so many examples of you think, oh, well, this is going to change things, and it never does, especially with WWE. So you sit there, and it's hard to get excited for certain things, but at the same time, you're almost, there's some, like myself, that's a little like, well, we'll wait and see. Because at the end of the day, even if I want a successful Japan, I want a successful AEW, I want a successful Ring of Honor, I want a successful WWE, I want all of these companies to succeed so that I'm so overloaded with wrestling content, I have to pick and choose, and I have to pick the very best for myself, and not go, well, WWE sucks, so I'm going to go watch NXT, or I'm going to go watch Japan, or I'm going to watch some old Japan matches, or I'm going to go watch AEW. I want there to be the feeling of real competition and everyone trying to one-up themselves and constantly trying to push for a quality content. And you're absolutely right on the writer part. Like, that just shows a lack of almost common sense. Anyone that you'd think from a creative standpoint is, okay, you're going to write for this character and we're going to have, we can't have a writer's room all writing for this character. We need to have one person working on this story. But even better, you just let the wrestler do what he's good at, and especially someone like Jon Moxley. Just let him do his thing and he'll get the story across. Give him the bullet points, let him know where you're going next, and he'll get you there.
Yeah, that would be ideal. But and again, another thing is, we've seen this with Heyman in the past, you know, we've seen him essentially come to verbal blows with the McMahons twice in the past when he was running shows, you know, lasting about 6 months each time. I don't even know if he can last 6 months this time. Maybe he can, maybe he can't. Eric Bischoff, you know, I mean, he'll eat a shit sandwich if it means there's a paycheck. He hasn't had a really, He hasn't had a lot of money coming in. He's had some financial issues, apparently, over the last several years. So, you know, but again, like, Fox apparently wanted Heyman when they found out about it. They didn't know about it, but they wanted Heyman, not Bischoff. Who wouldn't?
Oh, yeah. No, that, you know? That's the, like, you look, I read somewhere there were a bunch of higher-ups in Impact that were kind of questioning the choice of Bischoff for WWE, and especially for arguably what's going to be your flagship show on Fox. That's your big show moving forward, especially with the deal and the money that's coming from Fox. So I was a little surprised, because especially with the history that Heyman's had on SmackDown, that should have been like an easy layup and then like, yeah, no, Heyman goes here, Bischoff can go to Raw, because essentially you could position Raw like your WCW, Nitro, that very sports entertainment. And I think Heyman gets the sports aspect of professional wrestling and can marry it with the entertainment side. So that's another very interesting choice, because now you put Heyman on what I at least now will consider the B show, and you put Bischoff on the A show, and I'm not entirely sold on either of them being in that spot. Because traditionally Raw has been a sports entertainment show, and SmackDown has traditionally been your wrestling show. And now I guess those roles are going to flip, which I think is a little weird, because Fox wants the sports aspect for SmackDown, and USA enjoys the sports entertainment side. So,
you know what? I will say this. When you looked at when Nitro first debuted and really took off, they were doing things like pushing cruiserweights and technical guys like Dean Malenko, and television titles and Benoit and these different guys. So I can't say that the sports part hasn't been there with Bischoff in the past at times. Like when you look at it, to tell you the truth, you could probably almost break it down and argue that he's more of the sports guy of the two, honestly. But I, at the end of the day, the direction for will how much direction will they be? I mean, it's like there is a group collective making decisions, and then whatever they do, the final decision maker is either going to say yes or no. And yep. We know that Vince McMahon sits there on the day of the show and changes the scripts and rewrites segments himself and does all this and that and thinks that everything he's been putting on the TV that we're all saying is terrible, he thinks it's good. And there's no reason for me to think that if a guy like either one of them came to him and said this and it was good, that he'd be able to recognize it's good. And that he wouldn't sit there in the last minute and make changes himself. How much is he going to be able to step away from this to do XFL? I mean, I don't know. It's the whole thing just – but also you come back to the past. Like, it's just that – like it's never in the history of the business has that really been what works. Like, even for making new stars – and this is the one thing – and this is the problem, one of the major problems, okay? Not the problem, because there's the bunch. But this is a big problem. Historically, Paul Heyman is really, really good at finding and pushing new stars. You know, he would do it in ECW. Obviously, he would find guys like Taz and push them. And when those guys would leave and go to the WWE, he'd find guys like Mike's Awesome and push them until they were left. Like, he would always find that next guy. When he came over to SmackDown, he was pushing, you know, Brock Lesnar, and obviously Lesnar was obvious, but he was pushing those new stars. I mean, he pushed up Eddie Guerrero. He saw him as a new star, despite the fact that he'd been around for a while. Like, he was able to elevate guys. And same thing in ECW, they wanted to, you know, go with Lashley, and he wanted to go with Punk. McMahon wanted Lashley. He wanted Punk. Like, he saw Punk as the guy. He's always willing to put that guy on who's like a new star. And you got Bischoff, who the whole reason that like half of the roster left WCW to go over to the WWF at the time was because he wouldn't push the new guys who were clearly getting over. And in TNA, if you look at it, it was Sting and it was whoever came over from WWE, and they never pushed Samoa Joe or these guys. These guys got to work together. Like, this is different philosophies. And yeah. Vince McMahon just brought back The Undertaker, which is really helpful, he says sarcastically. I just don't think that this is – I just don't see a good end to this. Like, I wish I could. But whenever a business has ever turned around in any territory, it hasn't been from taking a long-term guy and who was like a mid-carder and elevating him. Like, if you look at like a Bret Hart, he stabilized business, but he didn't turn it on or bring it on fire, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, guys like that historically they don't. So Seth Rollins, who's kind of mid-carder for a long time, or Becky Lynch even, or Kofi Kingston – it's not these guys. It's new people. It's when somebody who was in a territory left comes back, or when it's somebody brand new. It's when it's when Hulk Hogan, who was in WWF, leaves and comes back, or it's when a guy shows up like The Rock, Steve Austin being a bit of an outlier because he was only there for a year and he had a change of gimmick, but changes of gimmicks works, but to a degree, but. Like, it's always new people that actually spark a territory, or people that have been gone for a long time and come back and are different. Hulk Hogan left as a heel. He came back as a babyface years later, right? Like, that's what turns business around. It's stars.
Yeah.
There's a whole – and this brings me to a whole other point. I'm sorry if I'm going on too long here. But one of the major reasons we don't have stars and we won't have stars, and even – I don't care if – Heyman is better at making stars. And, I mean, Bischoff, not so much. Not so much, but
I think the only star that you could say Bischoff played created was Goldberg. I can't think of any. I think you may know better, but I feel as though when you look at it, the creation of Goldberg was his one great creation.
Goldberg, I think to a lesser degree, you could say Booker T. Definitely Goldberg. Goldberg's the big one. DDP. Definitely, I think you could give him DDP, not as big as Goldberg, but very big still. I think you could even say to a degree Sting, because Sting was a popular guy in a territory that was never hot. Whereas under Bischoff, he became an incredibly hot, iconic pop culture character. So he has done it, but historically, no.
Yeah,
you know, like historically, he's not so good, and it's the same thing. Like right now, and I was looking at these guys, and I'm looking at any of them, guys like Sami Zayn, who I really like, you know, and so talented, and Kevin Owens and Kofi Kingston, and I'm like, you know, these guys are all great wrestlers, but you know what they aren't? Is they're normal guys, yeah. Like and. That's the thing about wrestling, that when it was at its biggest, both in the 80s and 90s, normal guys weren't drawn to it. It was out. It was guys who didn't fit into other areas of society, like those. And that's what gave them the big personalities that people remember. I mean, Ultimate Warrior was a chiropractor, had a degree as a chiropractor. Do you think he could have been a chiropractor? Not a chance. Yep. He didn't fit in to that, really, to a day-to-day life structure. So a place that these misfits of the world, these Roddy Pipers and Hacksaw Duggins and later on the Scott Halls and these different people, they found their way into this. And the personalities that made them not fit into society made them charismatic successes in wrestling. But now you don't have these personalities anymore, because now they're all really guys are like Family Guys, and they play video games, and they're just like you and me. And frankly, that doesn't create the characters that you're going to be sitting there and talking about. You know, like the Honky Tonk Man. Honky Tonk Man couldn't have been a banker. Like that guy could not have fit into society and done that. But that's what made him a success in wrestling. And characters like that are just like mid-card characters, they're never going to be around again. And it's like as I'm watching these guys, I'm like, which brings back the point of when we talk about the sport. The entertainment part's never going to be the same. The guys aren't as charismatic as far as personalities and larger-than-life personalities, and they aren't as charismatic promos, even I think even if the writers weren't there, I don't believe they'd be either one of these things. But what they are is better technical wrestlers. That's the part that everybody gets into wrestling now, not because they go, man, I want cut promos like Dusty Rhodes. They get into it because they say, I want to wrestle like Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
You know, they might not dislike, they might love the promos, but at the end of the day, all of them want to have that 5-star match.
Yeah.
And that's people, and that's what they love. You hear a guy like Will Ospreay talk about it, how he loves it. He loves being in the ring and telling the stories. That's the part that they enjoy. That's the part that drew them to them. So the guys that are influencing them now are no longer these larger than life. So if you're gonna turn it around, you have to cater to the people's strengths. So you have to cater to guys like what a guy like Seth Rollins does best, or you know, AJ Styles and these things. And that's not the sports entertainment off. I totally took the show off the rails, did I?
I don't think it was as bad. One of the reasons we bring you on here is to hear your takes on things, because we so seldomly get to hear it. I think it's one of those things that it's important to hear different sides of
us old people. Yeah, you can say
yeah, you're I look at you as kind of a historian that has a ton of knowledge on the past, that I mean you were able to call Cody starting a promotion. Yeah. That's still something that sticks out, so that's where something like this happens. I've got my young spry mind here of 26
here, let's go back 3-4 years ago. You know, guys that just joined the We Talk and started doing the show, probably was it 4 years ago?
And
I'd come on one of the shows and early on and talked and this and that. And I remember, and I was complaining a lot about WWE. And like 4 years ago, you guys weren't complaining as much. And at one point, Josh, in our message groups was like, well, I don't understand why you're always complaining. He's like, if you don't like it, just don't watch. And I'm like, no, dude, that's the problem. It's not that I don't like it. I love it. Like I love the WWF. I want it to succeed. So it pisses me off when I see them not being the best they can. And when it pisses me off when I see them doing things that are eventually they're gonna fade their audience and ruin the company. And that was always my fear. And it's gotten to that point where it's getting close. Despite these huge money deals, when you're seeing 33,000 people show up for a SmackDown taping, you are close to being at that point if you already are past that point. So years ago I was complaining about them, not because I wanted to complain about them, but because years ago I was saying what was happening then was eventually going to lead us to where we are now. I'm not saying I'm a futurist, but I'm a futurist. I was calling it then, I'm calling it now, and it's because of what they've been doing for years. This has been going on for so long.
And that's a big thing where you look at the past history and the constant of just the way they handle things, the way they handle talent, the way they handle just day-to-day operations. It's like a three-ring circus.
Well, the writers have been there for years, right? I mean, it's not like writing came out in the last 2 or 3 years. They've had writers for years. They just didn't have a staff of 50. They had, or whatever they got now, 40, I think it is. I mean, they've had writers forever. You know, and it kept growing. And I see they just, like, 2 months ago, they hired 2 new writers. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that they hired
2 new writers. This was, like, 2 months ago. They hired one guy who worked on a hidden camera prank punk-like TV show that Betty White starred in. And the other guy was a writer for a comedy game show. These are the writers you're bringing in. Do you hear that? A person in a prank, hidden camera prank TV show, and a person who writes comedy lines for celebrities on a comedy game show for pseudo celebrities. Do you think to yourself that's going to turn business around? But that's what they are looking for, and that's what they have been looking for. And so it doesn't matter who's in charge if these individual shows. It's this whole dynamic. People like that are not who you bring in to make a good wrestling product. And making a good wrestling product is how you turn this around in 2019. Because that's what your guys are. They aren't larger-than-life sports entertainment personalities anymore. These guys are awesome wrestlers.
Yeah, absolutely. like I don't know if you've seen any of Japan recently, but you look at a guy like Will Ospreay, and we're gonna get to Will Ospreay because he had some fun on social media this week. It's been a very busy week. You look at the matches that he's had, and it's just been lights out. From what he's done in the Best of the Super Juniors to what he's gonna do in the G1, I'm excited to watch Will. I am quite excited, and especially with him being in the A block and the 9-10 matches that he can have, I'm all there for it. I'm ready. I'm set. Let's do it. And I'm ready to see him kick out of a curb stomp at one. Because you know
that
he's
would be funny.
You know he's gonna do it too.
That would be funny.
And like, here's the thing, like,
he's wrestling Moxley, so that's very interesting, because I mean, it's not, you know, at one point, because Moxley also, Rollins, frankly, I think he put his foot in his mouth again with the things he said about Moxley. So the fact that those two guys are in the same block and will wrestle each other, no, aren't they? Are you sure?
Ospreay's block A, so Ospreay's gonna face Ibushi again.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking about. I was like, oh, we get Will Ospreay and no, we don't. Because that's a storyline that writes itself for Japan.
Still could happen.
Oh, I would not be shocked if it, because I can't see, there's no way Ospreay's, well, there might be, I don't think Ospreay's.
Well, no, neither one of them is going to the finals. So that doesn't mean it couldn't happen after G1.
Yeah, and that's where I think it should happen. We've talked about them. But let's get into Seth Rollins, and partially, I like you previously mentioned the Moxley line, which we'll get to. But the thing that kicked everything off this week, and boy, it's been an interesting week already. Seth Rollins said that WWE is the best wrestling period, and he's the best wrestler in the world. And Ospreay kind of raised his hand on Twitter saying, "I'm alive." And Seth called him a little man and basically belittled him on Twitter and basically said he'd sent a tweet reply to Wade Keller that he was looking to be he wants respect and he's not getting it. And it just seems like a very emotional response from your Universal Champion. And you're arguably the face of Monday Night Raw right now.
Well, not arguably. He is the face of Monday Night Raw right now. Him or Becky Lynch, who herself this week said, "We have more 5-star matches than anybody," in defending Seth Rollins. So she's an idiot. I'm sorry. Like, it's nobody blames you for saying you love the WWE. If he said, "Oh, we love the WWE. We have great talent. We have we'll put on an entertaining show for you guys. We're going to give you our best." Everybody be like, "That's fine. Like, yeah, we appreciate that. You are giving us your best in those circumstances." And if he says, "I think it's the best product, it's the one I'd rather watch. I hope you guys think so too, and we're going to keep giving our 100% for you." Nobody would have a problem. It's this other stuff. It's this stuff that is going to, and this is where it starts on social media. The dislike for Roman Reigns started on social media and led to the arenas. And it's going to happen with him now because he keeps opening his mouth. Even this stuff about Heyman and Bischoff. What is his code? Is Bish is back with all capitals and an exclamation point. Team WWE, hashtag Team WWE. Nobody like Steve Austin told the WWE to go F themselves. He didn't say, "I love the WWE. It's so great." That's not what people want out of Rollins. Like any character right now. Nobody wants a kiss ass. People didn't like John Cena for his kiss ass. And I just wonder if, especially if Becky doubles down with him like that, it'll be harder for people to turn on Becky. But I don't think it's going to be hard for people to turn on Rollins.
Well, I feel like he's made it a little bit easier because Rollins, the week's not over, but he added to the week the line from Sports Illustrated basically saying that Moxley took his ball and went home and that certain people aren't cut out for the WWE and... Howard.
Stupid. Just stupid on so many levels. Just a dumb thing to say on so many levels.
But I will tell you this right now. Like, the cat's out of the bag, and there's no taking that back, and Rollins has to live with those. But you can't for a second tell me that wasn't spoon-fed to him by Vince McMahon. That,
oh, of course it was.
Some of these comments aren't directly coming from Vince. And that, again, ties into what you said is people want Austin, and Rollins is the corporate champion right now on social media. Here's the thing. I understand wanting to live, breathe, and die for that company. I get it. I absolutely 100% get it. And if
I think we all do.
Any company, whatever company you're with, that should be your goal, is to live, breathe, and especially in professional wrestling. Other areas of life.
Other areas of life, I don't know.
But for something like pro wrestling, where your life's on the line and it's a number of bad things can happen in a moment, you have to be all in on that company that you're with. And if you're like, for example, we saw the video about Big Cass this week from DDP Yoga, and just him talking about his anxiety and depression and how he was coping with things, and just the downward spiral for him. So it's that thing where it's not safe to have someone in there that is on that slope down. And I get you got to give it your all. But you can give your all, and you don't need to constantly go on social media and go, look at me, look at me, I'm the best. Not Will Ospreay, not Kenny Omega, not Joe Blow.
Yeah, well, you can even say you're proud of your work, you're proud of yourself, and you're proud of your company. But you don't have to say the other companies are, you know, the jabronis with wearing swim trunks and T-shirts, as he described them, which is, you know, Kevin Owens. I don't know. Like, Seth Rollins is, I don't know, I think I'm ready to boo him, you know, and I wasn't 2 weeks ago. Like, I'm ready to turn on him. So I just think that's what's going to happen.
It's one of those things where I loved watching Rollins in ring, and I loved. Like, when he'd wrestle someone like AJ, or he'd go out and have that gauntlet match. Like, he was constantly going out there and busting his butt. But being paired up with Corbin is just a way to cool someone off down to, like, chilly as ice. And now
you're only as strong when you're a babyface champion. You're only as strong as your heel opponent. And, you know, Kingston and Rollins have suffered greatly because of that. And another thing about this is, you know, I mean, because you said you should be behind your company and this and that, but that's the problem. It's not up to the performers there to love the company. He loves it because he's the champion. He's met his lady there. He makes really good money. You know, like he gets a chance to wrestle and do moves and more than a lot of undercard guys and to do what he wants. So he has no reason to complain, but it's not up to, like, no, these guys should not love the company. They should feel as much loyalty to the company, everybody should, as they feel the company gives towards them. They shouldn't give more, and you shouldn't give less. You should give exactly what you feel. So if you work for a place that you feel valued, and you feel respected, and you feel listened to, and you don't want to give your best, then you're an ass. But if you want to give more than they're going to give back to you, which is the case with Rollins and so many other guys, we hear about the horrible morale and all the people that want out. I don't blame those people. That's not their fault. And for him to sit there and say Moxley shouldn't be saying this stuff, no, they shouldn't be making their employees feel like this. That should be the answer. It should be Moxley he should be standing up for Moxley, saying it's too bad they made him feel like that. I'm the champion. They don't make me feel like that, but that they should look at it and stand up for the boys. Stand up for the boys.
Because you look at it, you look at Moxley, Ambrose, when he was champion, and I remember that day where he flew to Hawaii and he did two house shows. Like, he was running the gambit. Like, he was going full tilt. He was your champion. He was arguably one of your hotter stars that you had. You cooled him off from not having him beat Hunter at Roadblock to the what the Brock Lesnar match was, to just kind of fizzling out and then kind of heating him back up again. But he was still giving your all for your company. And you're absolutely right. To me, when Seth says, oh, he shouldn't have said that, that means that caused some trouble for WWE. You shouldn't have said that. You blew the whistle on something.
If this is causing him trouble, imagine what's going on with Renee.
Yeah.
Can you only imagine?
You can't tell me for a second they're not. Because I saw a rumor that they were going to have a show on FS1, and they want Jerry the King Lawler to host it, not Renee.
Wow.
Which, to me, is a mistake yet again, because me and Josh have had this conversation. There was a nice streak there where Raw was what Raw was, but SmackDown had AJ, Dean, Cena, Bray. Like, they had a decent roster going. They had Talking Smack. They had the stuff with Brian. Like, it was a constant enjoyment. And then they just stripped SmackDown apart. They just tore it to shreds, and then they left it looking just like Raw. And it's you have something with Renee and you're not doing anything with it.
Well, they had something. It's done. Like, and now, like I say, it's got to be a really weird situation for her. It's already done. She frankly is horrible as an announcer. I don't know why they can't. Their announcing is so bad. It's another thing that they don't do well. Again, we're talking about this. Okay, Heyman comes in, Bischoff comes in. Does that mean they're going to be able to start calling them wrestlers and it's wrestling? Or is it still going to be sports entertainment? Because unless you, again, change the verbiage that they use that is terrible and stupid and nobody uses and sounds fake and sounds corporate and turns the audience off, do they have the power to change that? Because if they don't, guess what? It's not going to help. It doesn't matter who's doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're going to look at it, and you're going to look at, like, this is kind of flipped into a question a bit. How much of a role do you think AEW has in this sudden spike of WWE being more defensive? And we'll get to Kenny Omega's tweet and everything that came with that in a bit. But just from announcing the Evolve show to announcing this big thing, and it is a big thing for this company, just how much role do you think AEW has to play in this? Or do you think this is more of a Fox wants this, so we've got to try to keep Fox happy?
I think it's a lot of these things. Like, it's not one thing, right? It's everything plays a factor into it. I don't think a lot of stuff, if AEW wasn't there, would have changed. Like, I don't think their ratings would be any better if AEW wasn't coming. And, you know, like, it's always been about WWE. We said this on this show before in the past. The only thing that take WWE down is WWE, and they're on their way to doing it.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the case. So I don't know if this defensiveness is Fox not happy yet? I mean, who knows? I mean, I can only tell you this. You talk about Fox wants 3 million viewers. Okay? 3 million viewers. USA Network wants 2.75. Which, considering how few less homes are in, is actually, in some ways, it's a greater rating than what Fox wants.
Yeah.
It's actually harder to achieve at this point, though it's where they were just a year ago.
That's crazy to think just how steep the rating decline has been for this company and the attendance.
It's like 21.5% for the year or something. Like, that's what they're paying for is 2.65 to 2.75 is what they're paying that amount of money for. If they got the ratings they're getting today at today's price, or even if they dropped another, you know, 200,000 people at today's price, it still wouldn't be so bad. But the price that they're paying, which is almost the same as what Fox is paying, is not for 2 million viewers. So, like, it's not just Fox. And don't, you know, there's a lot of pressure to succeed in Fox because the platform is bigger, and so the spotlight is bigger, and it will be more talked about on mainstream websites because it's Fox. But the truth is that this isn't just Fox. This is also USA, and they got to satisfy two different masters. And you can't have one fail at the success of the other, which is, let's face it, a lot of the times what they've said and done in the past, SmackDown's heating up, like you said. We're going to make sure everybody knows Raw is the A show. two shows, man. Yeah, it's sad. Like I there would have been a time when hearing Hall of Heyman's name would have made me so happy. But I think we're past the point of Heyman fixing it, of anybody fixing it. The problems is so, you know, deep. The problems that are causing these issues run so deep. Even without McMahon there, you know, it would be like, did you watch Triple H's Road to WrestleMania?
Yes, I did. I did. I thought it was good. I thought it was good quality from a production standpoint.
Yeah. So there was a point in there where one of the performers, I can't remember who he was talking to, but he said something like, I think that's good, but I think that this, what you're saying needs to be more you and not so much scripted, basically, is what he said to the person. I think you need to show more of yourself in what you're saying. And there was also a part where he's talking to people and he was upset that they were being classified as entertainment. He wanted people to recognize the sports aspect. And that gave me hope. That gave me hope. When I saw him say that to that person about more of you in there and less, you know, phoniness, more of your personality and yourself. And when he went to that place where he did that little speech on stage and asked him questions and it was about the sport aspect. And then this happens and he kind of gets bypassed. And I just don't know. And I realize it's, even if he gives me hope, like, would he ever, he'll never be Vince McMahon, the guy who's like all the answers are coming from him. Like, that'll never happen. It'll always be so many cooks and fingers in the, after Vince is gone, it'll be like so many people making decisions and fighting for power.
Oh yeah,
it's gonna be Lord of the Flies out there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It will probably have an ending to compare it to another one. It'll probably be like the ending of Game of Thrones, just kind of falls flat, and it's a little like, oh.
Yeah.
I guess this is where we are. Kevin Dunn has all the power. Bucky makes all the decisions in WWE.
Nobody wants Bucky Beaver making all the decisions. But that's it, though. It's going to be like, it's not going to be, he's not going to be Vince McMahon, where at least it was one guy's vision. That vision is, you know, overrated and old now, an old vision and an overrated vision. Even like, a lot of his success came from the fact that he was lucky enough to get stars that made the product. But he's proven when he doesn't have the star come about with the incredible talent, The Rock or the Hulk Hogan, the guys whose charisma you can't teach. When he doesn't have that, when he has guys of average talent, he can't make them better. Paul Heyman made guys who are of average talent better his whole career.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but Vince McMahon can't do that. He's had money. He's the greatest promoter. He's not a great booker, storyteller, anything like that. He's the greatest promoter. He took WrestleMania a couple of years ago in Dallas, convinced people it was so important to be there and it was going to be the biggest WrestleMania ever, and they ended up getting 97,000 people, enough for them to say 100,000 with their work number, you know. But he made, it wasn't a better card than this year's or than the year before that, but he made people think that it was more important to be there because it was going to be the biggest one ever. So he's so great at making something seem bigger than it is and making you ignore the obvious in front of your face. Like, that's why he's the greatest promoter ever. But those are all things that they're kind of shallow in their nature. Like, you can do that for a little bit, or you can fool people for an event or two. But, you know, and you can get these great stars that you're lucky enough to have show up, as the thunder just rolls right in here. But he's not good at – he's the best promoter ever, but he's not the best at anything else. And he's so long gotten credit as being better at – storytelling and all these other things, these creative genius, than he really was. When, if you look at it, look at those gimmicks that he gave people over the years. I mean, damn, almost every one of them, like Mr. Perfect and the Million Dollar Ted DiBiase, those are the two gimmicks I look at that he gave people that were great gimmicks. The rest of them, Randy Savage, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin, essentially these guys came themselves. Remember, he wanted to call Stone Cold Steve Austin Chili McFreeze. This guy would not have main evented any WrestleManias as Chili McFreeze, let me tell you.
No, God, no.
Maybe The Undertaker. But I think The Undertaker wasn't that great a gimmick. It's the guy who played it, elevated it.
Yeah, a voodoo undead wizard, and somehow worked.
Yeah, we've seen that essentially. I mean, that same character, Jason the Terrible in Stampede Wrestling, was that same character before The Undertaker, with a little less polish a couple years before. So it's not like I really can't think of, can you think of any other great, I can think of tons of crappy gimmicks that he's given people. Tons of Chili McFreezes.
Vince McMahon created, because he didn't make Macho Man.
No, Macho Man was himself. Roddy Piper was himself. He didn't create these gimmicks. He gave them a spotlight because he had great distribution and television, but he didn't create them. He can get credit for, he's like, I created these stars. Well, no, you gave a spotlight to already talented people and great gimmicks that existed. That's different. Same with Hulk Hogan. He didn't create Hulk Hogan. The Rock, did he create The Rock? Not really. The Rock created The Rock. That talent was, undeniable.
Yeah. And Austin, once Austin 316.
Undeniable. Austin 316. Remember, he wasn't supposed to win that King of the Ring. Hunter was. It wasn't until the curtain call that he ended up replacing Hunter last minute.
Austin 316
never happens. Never happens. If Hunter doesn't bow with those other guys. Oh, my God. I mean, I think you've seen this thing outside. Is it coming down? I think, can you see that?
Oh, I can definitely see that outside. It's
Lord, see all the animals lining up, one male, one female, waiting for a boat to pick them up in the corner. Good Lord.
Well, after certain nights after Raw and SmackDown, you'd think it's the end of the world.
Yeah, you really would.
It's like, all right, well, this is it. We're done. It's finished.
We're done. So yeah, if you really look at it, you look at the gimmicks over the years, like up until. Like, obviously, he doesn't have any control of the gimmicks when they're in NXT, really. But as soon as they come to Raw, he changes the gimmicks anyways. You know, or SmackDown, right? And worsens them. And then just all the gimmicks, the Akeem, the African Dreams, to the TL Hoppers, to the, he's never been good at it. I'm sorry. He's had, three good gimmicks his whole life, maybe. The Million Dollar Man was the character he had dreamed for himself from the time he was a child. So of course that was good.
Oh yeah, that was his baby. Would you say he made Sean that character?
But that character really, what is that character? What makes that the character is really no different than the performer is different, but yeah. Rick Rude or anybody else, right? Yeah. Like it's not some groundbreaking gimmick that you can go, wow, he made that gimmick. You know what? When Mick Foley came in, he gave him the Mankind gimmick. But remember, he wanted to call him, I can't remember, something like Myar the Mutilator or something stupid. Like the Mutilator. It was something the Mutilator was the gimmick he wanted to call him. And that was a great gimmick. But a lot of that was Mick Foley took that gimmick that they gave him. They had a very basic idea for. And Mick Foley, again, a spectacular talent. The type of guy you don't get anymore, who spent a lot of time thinking about the character and developing it. He wrote his own promos. It was those promos that established the character. You know, did Vince McMahon have a say in it? Yes. He had a say in it. But he also gave us Dr. Isaac Yankum. But it was, if Mick Foley doesn't have the talent that he has, if they had given that to, one of the Godwins or something like that, Henry Godwin, that character wasn't special enough that it would have lasted.
Yeah. No, I absolutely put value into what you're saying. Like, cause you look at it and it's just, it's going to be really, really interesting where we are 5 years from now, because this is, we're constantly seeing, like, as my friend Doug has said, it's like WWE's atrophied. Like, they're atrophying, the body's hitting rigor mortis, and it's just getting stiffer and stiffer as the days go on. I don't think this Heyman and Bischoff's going to be able to spring it up and the body's going to be able to run miles again.
Well, and it's supposed to, I believe, start taking place in July 15th is where we're supposed to start to see it. And I'm sure over the next couple of weeks we'll get curiosity viewers. And then, so it'll spike. based on this. And then you'll start to see it come back down. Because that's how it works. Like, people will check it out, see if it's really different or not different. Like, they made promises a few months ago about things being different, and for it spiked things for a couple of weeks and then went down. But part of the problem is, as soon as Vince McMahon doesn't like it, he might give Heyman and Bischoff control for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. As soon as they start doing something, he's like, well, this is not good. This is going to cause things to tank, you know? Or if the ratings aren't as strong as he anticipated, he's gonna start putting his fingers back in. He can only step away for less than a month at a time. And the other thing is like, even if they did turn it, the product is, a lot of people have left, and they're not going to really, they'll only regain a few people that left. Some people that left a long time ago, some people that will check it out if it gets good again. Some people that will, that left recently, but mainly you got to build a whole new audience. And considering how poor they are with people, with the young people, and how a good majority of their audience is over 50, it's going to take a while. Like, you have to have patience to rebuild this, because you've done so much damage for – it's been every year you've done a little bit of damage for almost 22 years straight.
And that's wild to me.
And it's added up, right? Just like exponentially, it's added up. Just, a little bit of damage. You're not doing – could be better. This could be better. This could be better. This could be better. And to the point where it's like, wow, things really aren't good. And it's gonna take patience. You can't just turn it around. You can't go from 2 million to 3 million just like that.
No,
it will take a long time of a good product and to create buzz and create new fans. And a lot of that comes from creating new stars, not somebody currently in the roster. Which is why I would be like, bring up Matt Riddle, have him win the Royal Rumble, and give him the title and say you're the guy, and try and see if somebody fresh can do what Steve Austin did.
Yeah, absolutely. Because at this point, what damage are you really going to do to your product? What more can you do? You got to take some chances. This is absolutely the time now to take some chances.
It's such a, like, it's crazy. Like, they have the superstar shakeup, and you bring in you take some people off 205 Live because they were just killing it, but they're great. And Mustafa Ali, who got a little bit of a something, but now he's less and less on TV, it seems, all the time. Cedric Alexander, who you just never use or just never debut even, he's just running around chasing R-Truth with everybody else. Do nothing with him. Buddy Murphy shows up on TV the very first time, and he goes, you all may not know me, but my name is Buddy Murphy, and I've been the 205 champion for the last whatever. That was like his opening line, basically. And the crowd cheered, like, as soon as they saw him. So it was like, not everybody knows him, but those 15, 20% of the audience that do know that he's earned their respect from how good he's been. And we haven't seen him since. And meanwhile, you're bringing back The Undertaker, and you're now using people from both brands, and it's way more than six you're using. And you don't have guys, room for guys like this, and it's just killing you. And how easy would it have been for you to bring out Buddy Murphy and say, he's new, he needs a win, he needs to establish himself. And you bring out Chad Gable and say, hey, I've been on this brand, I've been a champion, but nobody respects me as a single star. I need this win more than you do. And have these two guys for 2 weeks do some training and talking about how important this match is. I'm going to go out there, this guy, I'm going to kill it, I'm going to give my best. I need this win more than he did, and build up that match as important, the win as important, and then have them go out there and wrestle for 15, 20 minutes on a SmackDown and have a 4.5-star match because they could. Even if people don't know them, that's how you start to rebuild them and the product. And they just won't do it, and Bischoff won't do it.
Like, you speak about, and I think the wild card rule is what drove a lot of people away, and the minute that came into effect, a lot of people were like, well, I'm done with this company. I'm not going to watch for a while.
I think the wild card rule, but I think more importantly is I really think the Saudi thing is killing them more than they realize. Like, I think so many people are disgusted by them, like casual fans and a lot of younger people, I think, who are more socially aware of these type of things. I think it really has hurt them an awful lot. an awful, awful lot. And I really do. And then it just brings us to this Fyter Fest thing, you know, and what they did there. And that's the thing is WWE, this is why people are cheering for AEW. And they're actually cheering for AEW, not just chanting at shows, though they're doing that too. But I mean, they're cheering for the company, and they're you know, those crazy sick ticket sales and all this. Because WWE, it's I said it earlier. Remember we said about Kingston and Rollins and Lynch and these people. When you're a babyface, you're only as good as your heel. Well, WWE is a fantastic heel right now, and they're not going to have a babyface turn. They are a fantastic hated heel.
Holy and crap! That's
it makes AEW a fantastic beloved babyface by default.
Wow, that's a great analogy. Holy crap!
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Oh no.
That's when you find that just clicked on you for the first time, did it?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's why a guy like Heyman or whatever, even if they came in and had full control, wouldn't be able to turn it around for a while because they're a heel now. And you can't just become a babyface when you're this strong a heel without you got it. It's, you know, you can't just.
Unless you're Dean Ambrose, where you can come out and just cut a promo.
you know what? I can't say that. It has happened. I mean, one of the best babyface turn I ever saw in my life was a guy who was the most hated heel in the company who came out and cut a babyface promo out of nowhere. And it's the best. If you've never seen it, it's on YouTube. I recommend it. It'll give you chills. And it's so simple, but it was logical. It was Sergeant Slaughter was the most hated heel, vicious Sergeant Marine, you know, army dude who just vicious to his enemies. And then there was the Iron Sheik running down America. And one day he just walked out and he stood in the aisle. And he did the pledge of I'm getting chills as I talk about it. Just said the pledge of allegiance, and the whole crowd went with him. That was all it took because he was still an American. He was still in the army. He did still fight for his country, so it was logical, and it was out of nowhere, but it was completely logical. I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen a reaction like it. That was arguably the hottest feud the company ever had, still to this day, just ridiculously hot. So yeah, no, but. When you're talking about a company like this who's been a heel for this many years, they can't just turn babyface.
Yeah.
Like the people view the WWE a certain way. And even if they view Vince or Paul Heyman a certain way, they also view Vince McMahon and his willingness to take the blood money of a murderer and these type of things and Jimmy Snuka and just all the different stuff over the years that's slightly become more and more known. And, you know, It's all his own creation, isn't it?
Yeah. And well, that's I would make the argument that Vince McMahon's a big reason why this podcast is happening, just in general. The wrestling, it's wild just to think that where we are from when first WrestleMania happened to where we are now. It's wild. But shifting gears a little bit, We took our shots at WWE, but AEW took a couple shots this week. Not a lot, but a couple with a tweet from Kenny Omega that was swiftly deleted after he put it out, because WWE has announced that the Evolve show will be running at the same time as Fight for the Fallen, and Kenny had sent out a tweet saying, basically calling WWE out for taking blood money and trying to run a show running against a show that was supposed to be for charity, and just how disgusted and angry he was at it. He swiftly deleted it because there was a lot of backlash towards it because of guys like Jericho and Moxley that both had done Jericho had done one, and it openly admits that was the best payday he's ever gotten, and Moxley had done at least two of them. And it opened up a bit of can of worms, and Omega took a bit of a beating online just for the way it was worded. What's your take on it? Because I have my two cents on it, but I'm very curious of what your take is on it.
Well, again, all this makes WWE a heel. I mean, Jericho, Moxley, especially Jericho, you know, he's got to decide for himself on something like that, obviously. But I think Omega's right, honestly. I just think that, you know, he deleted it, and it was really because a lot of people were like, you know, it was partially, you know, like you said, Jericho and these things. There's also a lot of people saying, well, the people that, why shouldn't these people who work at Evolve get a chance to be seen more and that type of thing? And obviously they should. And I don't think, and I think that that's what the part that came across poorly to him was, because then afterwards he said something along the lines of, you know, I wish everybody who's at the show a good time. I'm not trying to say anything against the performers. I hope everybody does their best and has a good day. And it's not the performers that he's got an issue with. But the fact is, if this wasn't for charity, I don't think anybody would have a problem with it. It is for charity. It's well known it's for charity. It's just another thing that makes the WWE look like there's, you know, scummy.
Absolutely. And I saw the argument online of like, well, you asked for competition, you've taken shots at WWE, and now that WWE has taken a shot, you guys are kind of cowering upset. And I can see that argument, but I also look at it as you're doing this on purpose. Like, this isn't, oh, this was all accidental, we didn't mean to do it. The biggest thing I take away from everything that's happened on Twitter and social media this last week is you really should just take Twitter from all wrestlers and just be like, we'll let someone run your account. We'll just, because the stuff on Twitter is just toxic.
Twitter is toxic. Absolutely.
I feel like everyone should just be taken off of social media in a lot of ways. I mean, it's amazing to me how crazy the WWE stands are. The guys that are ride or die WWE all the way, screw AEW, screw New Japan, screw anything. And then on the flip side, the hardcore AEW is like, screw WWE, we hate everything about you. You're all scum, and I don't like any of your wrestlers. It's just, I think Meltzer said it best on Twitter, the fans that are rooting for the death of WWE and vice versa rooting for the death of AEW are baffling, because you shouldn't be rooting for the death of either of these guys, because the reality is both these guys are trying to make a living in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Both, you have a bunch of guys that they depend on those paychecks, and to sit there and be like, well, no, WWE, we hope Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks don't have a job anymore and then come to WWE and get paid nothing and are jobbers is absurd, and vice versa. I hope WWE closes down and Seth Rollins has to go and lose to Will Ospreay in 10 seconds. It seems ludicrous to me. And that's the biggest takeaway from all of this. I'm a big Kenny Omega fan, but I think Omega could have worded it better.
He was upset because this means a lot to him.
Yeah.
And he's trying to do something good.
Yeah.
It's the type of thing WWE never does and never has done.
And they never will. It's one of those things where you look at, how can I word this? You look at what they're trying to do and you just, I don't know. This is going to get nasty, and social media is going to get even nastier. Like this, I think this week was a preview to what October is going to be like.
I got something coming through. I don't know where it's coming from in my headsets. Can you hear it?
Nope.
Okay. Well, then just keep ignoring it and keep going on. Sorry.
No worries. We've got a preview to what these new version of the Monday Night Wars are going to be like.
I hope it's not all carried out through social media. You know, but I mean, yeah, companies going back at each other, that's been going on forever.
Yeah. You know? And you're going to have that. You're going to have the throne breaking moment from Cody. You're going to have some where Hunter takes a direwolf and shoots it. You're probably going to have these back and forth little pot shots. And
the throne breaking thing, though, that was clever.
That
was the difference. That was clever.
I'm interested to see, because that still causes a big divide online, and there's a bunch of people that... it's interesting, because AEW does anything, they get hit hard from a fan base. And if
WWE has a core fan base. Everybody loves always going to be somebody who cheers the heel. But there's clearly more the other side, I'm telling you.
I'm excited for Fyter Fest, which is this Saturday. I'm excited for Fight for the Fallen. I'm excited for All Out, and from all sounds, I'm really excited for Wednesday Night Dynamite.
Yeah, Wednesday Night Dynamite. I mean, that's it. I think I might have been putting a little bit too much faith in this to, fix everything. Maybe I should temper my expectations of, like, everything's going to be okay when AEW comes around. They'll fix everything. Life will be good again. And that might be a little, a little bit of a push. But it's absolutely – I'm pretty confident I'll get 2 hours of wrestling on a major network every single week that I enjoy, that's live.
And
unlike the 1 hour that I enjoy that's taped of NXT.
You get 3 hours. As long as everything goes, you can watch NXT and AEW and be done for the week. Unless it's Japan awesome. Has pay-per-view.
It's going to be awesome.
You be set. Because unless Vince decides that with AEW going on Wednesdays, that he decides that he needs to have more input and NXT has to be live on Fox, then we'll lose one of my favorite things. I hold NXT close to my heart. I love that thing. The two takeovers that I've been to, and just the performers that I've seen and the storylines from there, just it's fantastic. I don't want the old man to ever touch NXT. Stay away and let it stay. But my fear is,
well, that's apparently why Hunter hasn't been given more power, and it was given to Bischoff and Heyman, so he can concentrate on NXT.
I wonder if there's a little bit of pettiness with that, of being like, well, we don't want you showing me up, so we're gonna just keep with NXT.
There's a lot of pettiness in a lot of places here, and I think there's also a lot of and some people have said the conspiracy theorists that if Raw or SmackDown, if they either one of them has issues here or fail, well, then you got that. You got your scapegoats now built in.
Yeah, and both guys, they have no problem being the scapegoats.
Yeah.
Well, them being Vince has no problem putting them as the scapegoats.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think we're going to have to do a G1 preview at some other point. But,
yeah, we're gonna have to do the pick-ems and see which three of us come out on top. So we'll last year what we did was myself and Mo each night would pick who we thought would win for all, I don't remember how many nights there were of the G1, but we would pick them, and then we also picked who we thought was going to be in the finals and who was going to win. And Mo won last year, but damn it, I'm not going down without a fight this year.
I saw it all coming last year, and it was actually funny to me, because I talked about how it's so logical, Tanahashi, it's a fresh matchup with Omega, and you know, he looked like he was never going to get back to the top, and now get back to the top and win in the Tokyo Dome. And everything I said played out, and I don't think I called Ibushi as his opponent. I might have, I don't think I did, but I definitely called Tanahashi, and I called a lot of that. And then you find out that actually the plan was for him to go to the Tokyo Dome and lose. And I'm like, wow, so I didn't see everything. They changed the plan because Omega was leaving, but I didn't see everything coming.
Yeah, you don't have to say anything because I don't want to know, but how clear is this G1 to you this year?
Way harder than last year.
Yeah, way
harder. I think I have my predictions, but yeah, I think it's way, way harder.
Yeah, Moxley's an interesting one to me for this G1. He's definitely not winning. I just don't know how they're going to... He's probably going to be booked middle of the road. He'll probably get a couple wins.
Well, the thing is, he's still... It's his secondary commitment. And come the fall, that will be much more prevalent of how it's his secondary commitment. So... For that reason, I think you should temper expectations for him.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what Kenta does. And Osprey. That Osprey's the more interesting one because I feel like this year's G1 is the building blocks for a potential future G1 run for him.
Yeah, I think he'll do well, but it's interesting because, there's a lot of Block A, like you say, it has more star power.
Yeah.
But Block B has a lot of underrated guys who are going to have a lot to prove. So I think it's going to be it's going to be a great event.
I'm excited. I'm going to be following it along just like I did last year. And I enjoyed it last year. And any wrestling fan out there, I would recommend you follow along with the G1. It is highly worth your time.
Not only that, but go to that NWGP website where we do the picks, and it's online and it's free and compete with other people, and either people you know or just compete and see how you do against other people online there, because it added a lot last year, and I think will again this year. So.
And that's a big thing. It had an even more of a sports feel to it, which I loved.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
I think we've gone on long enough. The thunder's booming. The arc is being built as we speak. Fyter Fest is this Saturday, and I believe that me and Josh will have a preview show for it. I'm excited for it.
It should be good, but I think people got to keep in mind it's not a true pay-per-view. It's a house show. Maybe it's a little above a house show. It's closer to
a TV.
Saturday Night's Main Event, something like that.
That's actually a good comparison for it. Yeah. But they got some good matches. Moxley and Janela are now an unsanctioned match, and Moxley is busy digging Joey Janela's grave. So,
yeah,
someone's going to die.
You know, this is if I could just go off one little thing when I talk about. I mentioned earlier how I don't think the guys would ever be as good promo. You know, a big part of the reason with that is that if you wanted to draw and you're an independent company, independent promoter, like you're, Big East Wrestling in New York or something, and you wanted to draw, then you'd get a few local guys and you get a couple of guys that people know to take on a local guy. And then your main event, you would put Moxley against, like Pentagon or something like that. And as soon as you announce that, people are going to buy the tickets, and it doesn't matter if you cut a promo anymore. Like, because people now are so attracted to the matchup. Like, I'm going to see a 5-star match, or I'm going to see two people that the dream match or a rare match or whatever. And companies like PWG, even, like, they're not driven. They're driven by their interest is driven by the quality of the match, not by the promo. So that's a big. Not only do you not have territories in the television show, but even the independent shows. If Moxley was coming to Calgary and was to take on, I don't know, just mention somebody else in the independents, Jeff Cobb, let's just say, people would immediately go, Moxley and Cobb, awesome, and buy the tickets if they have interest. The promo is not going to add or detract any interest really anymore. And that's why the guys don't get to NXT and up to the upper roster, probably with the same ability to cut promos, though they would be better if they had no writers. Make no doubt about it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. No more writers. That is the drive home for this show.
Yeah, it's not that I blame the writers. It's just like I say, I blame Vince, but it's part of the bigger problem.
Where rigor mortis is a son of a bitch.
And now you're dealing with.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Mo's just gonna sing us out.
You might wanna cut the show now.
All right, Mo, thanks for coming on, and make sure stay tuned to everything on We Talk, and we'll be back with plenty more wrestling.
It's coming. You're going to see it pretty soon. There's going to be another update to the We Talk site. It's going to be better and cooler, and you Stick Boy and Fresh Take, you guys are going to have a bigger platform than ever. So keep a lookout. It's going on in the background. All these things take longer than I wish they did, but it's going to happen.
Good things come to those who wait. Thanks, Mo, for coming on, and we will be back again, and hopefully you'll be back on for more G1 fun that's coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, this was good. I had a good time. Thanks a lot.
All right, have a good one, and we will chat soon.
Goodbye. Mm-hmm. And good night. Bye.